Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to make sure that you knew that my online knee course with Lenny Macrina is on sale for $200 off this week. If you want to learn exactly how to evaluate and treat the knee, you're going to love our comprehensive course where we cover our clinical examination, exercise progressions, and specific information on ACL, meniscus, patellofemoral, articular cartilage, osteoarthritis, and so much more. Plus, you can earn a ton of CEU credit. The course is on sale this week for $200 off. Head to mikereinold.com/knee for more information and to sign up today.
Hey everyone, on this episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show, we talk about monitoring athletes over the course of a season, some of the common limitations we see in people with poor hip hinge, and should you be a specialized or generalized physical therapist?
The Ask Mike Reinold Show. Helping people feel better, move better, and perform better.
Welcome back, everybody, to the latest episode of the Ask Mike Reinold Show. We're here answering your questions at Champion PT and Performance up in Boston. We've got another big crew again today. This is pretty good. Greg Wilson, strength coach here at Champion PT and Performance, is joining us a little bit for this episode. Dave Tilley, as usual, when he's not on vacation. And working.
Wow.
And the infamous Lenny Macrina here with our students, Evan Eleven and Sir Nix-a-Lot.
All right.
I nailed that intro.
Finally, 27 episodes.
You know, we almost forgot.
There we go.
This is unintentional, but
nope.
Lenny and I want to go on record and officially thank Dan Lorenz. What's his Twitter handle? It's something about KC Rehab. KC Rehab Man.
Expert.
KC, yeah.
Dan Lorenz, awesome sports physical therapist out in the Kansas City area. We've been antagonizing him on this podcast and on the internet for quite some time. We had a bet last football season, I guess the Pats Chiefs or something, right? Is that what it was?
I believe so.
And the Pats won, I assume. I don't even remember.
So
he was supposed to send us ribs. We didn't quite get ribs, but we got some KC barbecue sauce in the house. Lots of variety. So thank you, Dan Lorenz. This episode is dedicated to Kansas City barbecue. We'll put those right here.
We love Kansas City barbecue.
I'm going to put my Brady jersey on and enjoy this. Some ribs in here. Not week one, but probably week two.
Hashtag free Brady.
All right. What are we here to talk about?
I think there are some questions.
What's the point of the podcast?
Yeah, I've heard questions.
Awesome. All right, Sir Nix-a-Lot.
All right, Kyle from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania says, I'm currently working in the professional ice hockey setting. I deal with a lot of athletes that are in an excessive anterior pelvic tilt with poor lumbar pelvic control. What methods would you recommend for evaluating throughout the course of a season for injury prevention? For example, FMS, PRI, manual muscle testing, or just simply evaluating movement?
All right, so in-season athlete, this is particularly hockey for his question, but in-season athlete, it's almost like that was like a big question and a little question.
Yeah.
So in-season athlete, how do you manage them? And then two is, I guess, more the anterior pelvic tilt, but we can answer that within the whole thing. Anytime you work in-season with athletes, it's super important that you have to understand the unique demands of that sport. Pretty common sense, right? When you think of it that way. If you know nothing about hockey, you probably shouldn't be working in hockey. So, you know, that is what it is. But you have to understand what the demands are there. So all your athletes are in anterior pelvic tilt. Well, that makes sense. They're skating all the time. They're driving with their hips. They probably have tight hip flexors. They probably have tight groins. You know, they're hockey players. You know, so those are the unique demands for them. So what we did in baseball essentially over the last two decades really was we deconstructed what was normal. So here's what a normal person looks like and whatever that means. And then we studied what happened to them over the course of the season. So once you know what's normal and then what happens to them, and there's going to be cumulative stress over the course of the season, you want to deal with that stress. And my philosophy with baseball is every time you pick up a ball, I want you to look like you. Okay, I don't want you to look more than you or less than you. I want you to look like you. Okay, so my job is to maintain that through the season. So for you, it sounds like anterior pelvic tilt is going to be a big thing in hockey. You have to build some programs with your manual therapy, your stretching, your strength and conditioning programs that combat that cumulative stress that's going to cause that over the course of the season. So
yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, so you're just throwing anything at them to maintain them, whether it's needling, if you're a PT and you can do it in your state, or soft tissue work, it's foam rolling, it's, you know, just the the maintenance type program, and you've already established a good baseline during the season of where they're at, and you're trying to somehow maintain that. You know, you work with gymnasts a lot, and they're in a similar position.
I think also, so I still coach, you know, I still work with girls all year long, and I think the biggest thing for me is, like, you have to have some sort of monitoring system in place, whether, I mean, objective stuff is getting huge right now. We're, like, looking at heart rate variability, like omega wave and all these big things. So that stuff's awesome, but not everybody has access to some of these things.
Right.
I honestly think subjective, just talking with your athletes and listening to them and kind of hearing their feedback. And sometimes they don't want to tell you what's wrong, but you can get a vibe off then that, like, they're totally in the tank or, like, something's really wrong. And so I think being a good coach entails trying to always keep markers. Like, we have an attendance sheet with perceived soreness and perceived fatigue and some other stuff that they monitor. And I just kind of scroll down the list, and I look at someone's been like 7 out of 10 soreness for 3 days in a row. I'm like, what's going on? Right. And so that's one part of it. And then I think similar to gymnastics, baseball, just we've taken the similar thing. It's like, what is normal? Like, a little bit of anterior tilt is what you need to be successful in gymnastics. It's just kind of part of the sport. But if I have someone who's extremely there, or they're starting to get some back soreness, or they're starting to have really bad hip pain in the front, then you need to take a step back and break it down further. So,
yeah.
Nailed it. I mean, that's, you know, it's all about understanding them. You asked about what systems like FMS, PRI, that sort of stuff. Nothing beats touching your people.
Yeah.
You know, so just get your hands on there, easy. Get hands on with your athletes. You have to understand how they feel every day.
Right.
So if you're relying on a system, or if you're relying on even omega wave or a perceived exertion thing, you're going to miss out on the subtle indicators that you can feel with your hands, you know, prior to that. So
that stuff's only a marker to tell you should talk to them.
Right.
I think.
That's a good point. I totally agree. The sports science is getting huge,
better,
right?
Yeah.
So we're getting there with sports science, but you have to combine sports science with good old-fashioned hands, you know? So, nice. All right, what do we got, Sir Nix-a-Lot?
All right, what are the most common limiting factors that you observe in patients struggling with a hip hinge movement pattern?
All right, so some of the most common reasons why you could be limited in your hip hinge, essentially. So let's see, this might be a good one. See, this is why we have Greg Wilson in the house. He's a beast. So Greg, among his many other fine qualities, is our team training coordinator. So he does a bunch of our group programming here at Champion. So you get to see probably a dozen people a day that hinge poorly, right?
Yeah.
in that fashion. So, you know, our programs, we have things built into that to not only be able to work with them with a poor hip hinge pattern, but to build them, but, you know, get them better over time. But so what do you, from your perspective, Greg, what do you think? Why are people so bad at hinging?
Well, I think, from what I see, the population I'm dealing with is mostly just general population. So most of us in our jobs just sit all the time. So we're just really tight. And the hinge is just not really...
I'm standing for the rest of this episode.
The hinge really just isn't a pattern we're used to. And a lot of people just aren't used to doing it. So when they get out there and you tell them to go deadlift a kettlebell, they go over there and they just kind of squat, pick it up, and stand up. And then as soon as you try to correct them and they feel that pull in their hamstrings when they finally do it right for the first time, it's like, oh my God, what's happening? They get really nervous. They think they're hurting themselves, but it's really the first time they've ever felt that feeling in the back of their legs and their hamstrings doing a hinge properly.
Yeah, everybody seems to be quad dominant.
Yeah,
I don't know if I have a good reason why. I mean, other than, like you said, their posture and sitting there all day. I think that's the number one reason. It's disuse. You know, I mean, everybody has the ability to do it. They just don't know how to put the pieces of the puzzle together and actually perform it. So then once you get coached well, then, you know, you kind of get there. So, you know, to answer your question, why are people so poor? It's just from disuse. So it's just like any other motor pattern you want to try to build with someone. You just got to start with the basics and break it down and just teach them it again. So, you know, that's well said. So good work, Greg Wilson. Love it.
All right, Dan Crawford from Hayden Heights, New Jersey. He's applying to PT school now and had a question regarding becoming a generalized practitioner upon graduation. Almost relatable to youth sports specialization, is there a critical point at which the experience of certain clinicals takes away from the student's ability to get more time in their preferred setting?
Huh. Is he complaining about being generalized?
Yeah, I don't know.
I think he's saying he wants to be specialized, But he feels like PT programs are
too generalized.
Gotcha. Generalized.
Right.
I mean, let's use the physician model. I think they do it well. You have to be a doctor before you can be a specialist, right? Like, before you go to, you know, your orthopedics and stuff, you do other stuff like fellowships and residencies and stuff to kind of specialize down the road. You know, I don't know, maybe that's one of the negatives of PT is we don't do that enough. Like, everybody's just a generalist, but I don't know. What's he looking for? Is he looking for advice? Did I miss that? I just went off there.
I mean, it wasn't really a question.
He also mentioned like internships and stuff like that, right? So I think it's you got to go through the schooling and get your basics because you got to learn cardiopulm and neuro, and that gives you a great fundamental, good basis of just medical needs in general. And then I think for your internships, you start seeking out, you know, maybe a clinic that has a little more specialization in youth sports during your internships. Then you can start throwing out the whole argument about fellowships or residency programs or something like that, that I know is like an obsession in the PT student world. So you can start looking at stuff like that, places that have youth sports performance programs. But I think towards your last clinical, that's when you really want to think about finding a spot that has a good program that you can get involved with, see if you really like it.
It's part of our education. I mean, you have to be good at everything, and I think you should kind of like...
I just recorded that whole question on this.
Wow. Watch. Okay, Siri, we'll shut you down.
Siri just dictated that whole thing.
Yeah. Siri's done.
So I think in general, I mean, you have to learn all those basics.
Yeah, definitely.
And I would say that there are some things that cross platforms a little bit, like the whole PNF world is... gone from neuro to more ortho and sports, you know, over the time, stuff like that.
Never mind with direct access. You need to be able to see a full spectrum of stuff. You never know, even though we're in sports here, we see things that would blow your mind sometimes. You need to be able to recognize that, especially if somebody is not going through the whole process of seeing a doc and getting all that. You need to be able to recognize some of those other things, some of those red flags that are out there. And I think that's a big aspect of, you know, PT school.
Yeah. You can be specialized, but just realize that's probably not coming from your undergrad.
I would say that despite your specialty, whether it's a sport like baseball, gymnastics, whatever, like it's still the human body still has fundamentals that you have to understand and master before you go elsewhere. So I think a problem that I've seen in people, especially they contact me, like, I want to be in gymnastics too. Like, what do you do? I'm like, well, the first thing I did is take a step back and look at just the shoulder. How does the shoulder work? How does the knee work? And then you start to reverse engineer, like, youth sport injuries of growth plates or whatever, like it's still the same mechanics depending on what you're working in.
Right.
Makes sense. How about this student's perspective? You guys probably face this dilemma or you're facing it. What do you guys think?
So my program, we do three different clinicals and it has to be three different settings because they are stressing the generalist thing. But if you think about it, the board exam is, they're testing you on being a generalist.
All encompassing.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We all have to be physical therapists. You can be a pediatric physical therapist or sports physical therapist, but you have to be the physical therapist first.
Right.
Right. What do you think, Sir Nixon?
I think the generalizations, I mean, great to exactly like you're saying, we have to pass a license exam, but at the same time, I feel like, I mean, me and Evan both sought out these guys because we did want to specialize in sports and have a little more, you know, of those sports-related tools in our tool set to, you know, take going forward. But, you know, I think you have to just be proactive looking for a clinical site that fits your passion.
Yeah, try to nail your last clinical in the setting that you're most preferred.
I think people really kind of, especially in school, are like, I'm never going to use this. Like, what's the point? I personally found that I was using a ton of stuff that I never thought, especially cardiopulm and, like, advanced sports performance.
I picked up on that,
by the way. Yeah, all that stuff.
He's taking blood pressure over here. I recommend you do that.
We do that on everybody.
In the right setting.
Correct.
Even, like, wound care stuff I didn't think I would use, but, like, now I work with athletes in the sports, like, I'm point of contact, so... people are bleeding and worrying about stuff in my life.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. Another great episode. We really appreciate all these awesome questions. Go to MikeReynolds.com and click on the podcast link and keep asking away. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you have a question you'd like us to answer, head to MikeReynolds.com/podcast and fill out the form to submit your question. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. And please share this with your friends to help spread the word. It would really mean so much to us. Please check out all my online courses, articles, newsletter, and more at MikeReynolds.com. There's always a ton of great perks for my newsletter subscribers. And be sure to check for my other podcast, the Sports Physical Therapy Podcast, where I go deep into topics and interview leaders within our field. See you on the next episode.